20-2001 from the Eastern District of Arkansas, Matt Rayburn versus James Gibson.
Mr. Gillum?
Yes, sir.
Please proceed.
Okay. May it please the court, my name is Lucian Gillum. I represent Mr. Rayburn in an appeal of this grant of summary judgment. I'm going to spend most of my time dealing with whether or not there was arguable probable cause for the arrest, because the remaining claims would likely rise or fall on that issue. There are, you know, four potential criminal charges at issue here: disorderly conduct, criminal trespass, obstruction of government operations, and resisting arrest. My client was initially told that he was being told to leave and arrested for disorderly conduct. And the issue there is that at that time, there was no probable cause for that charge. The chief of police, Chief McNew, admitted at appendix pages 374, page 17, appendix 379, page 38, and appendix 380, page 44, that there was no probable cause for that charge, and that my client's constitutional rights were violated by any attempt to arrest him for disorderly. In addition, the court found that there was a mistake of law on that issue. That's addendum page 5. So I think that should dispose that charge. The next issue would be
counsel. Was arguable probable cause discussed?
Yes, arguable probable cause was discussed. The defendant's position in that was that, you know, basically at summary judgment was that if there was probable cause for any one of the charges, that it wouldn't matter that there was not probable cause for the remaining charges. So basically, if there was probable cause for any one charge that was brought, it wouldn't matter that there was a mistake on the others. And they, you know, of course, raised the point that because of qualified immunity, that if there was a reasonable mistake of law, given the facts and circumstances known to the officer at that time, that he wouldn't be subject to suit. And so basically that the standard is arguable probable cause. Yes, sir.
And so the district court found there was arguable probable cause?
Yes, sir. What they said was that what the district court said was that there was arguable probable cause on obstruction of governmental operations, which was not a charge that was actually brought against my client, but that under I'm about to say the name wrong. I think it's Devinsky or Devecki. That if there was probable cause for a charge that was not brought but could have been brought, that would still suffice to justify the arrest, which was not actually an issue that had been raised on the motion for summary judgment. But that was what the district court found, was that there was arguable probable cause for obstruction of governmental operations, which was not a charge brought against my client.
Counsel, I'd like to look a little more closely at arguable probable cause for trespass. There was a school official that said, I want you to talk to Mr. Rayburn, and if he doesn't calm down, he's going to have to leave. Why would that not create arguable probable cause for trespass when he did not calm down?
Okay, several reasons for that, Judge, is that, first of all, the chief himself found that basically under Briggs versus State, a refusal to leave where there is no request by management to officers to order a person to leave is not a lawful order that has to be obeyed. And the elements.
There was no direct order to leave, but there was the contingent order that, well, if he doesn't calm down, then he will.
Well, I want to backtrack to the elements of criminal trespass. I think that may help. Criminal trespass involves somebody who is purposefully remaining unlawfully on premises owned or leased by another person. And it's a defense to the prosecution under 539-203C that the person is a guest or invitee. And of course, this is a public park, open to all for baseball games and whatnot. So he was an invitee. And if you look at AMI 3904, the Arkansas jury instructions, a person who remains on premises or open to the public does so with license and privilege, regardless of his purpose, unless he defies a lawful order not to remain personally communicated by the owner or some other person authorized by the owner. Now, you have to have, in order to act purposely, you have to have a conscious object to engage in the conduct. And so, you know, the first issue is that the officer did not identify that he was over there on behalf of management, giving an order on behalf of management. So my client could not have developed the intent necessary to disobey an order from management or a person authorized because he didn't know it. Second thing is that even Chief McNew, and this is appendix pages 466 and 467 in the statement of undisputed facts, even Chief McNew said it was unclear that the park management wanted Rayburn to leave. So there's not a direction from them to give him that order. And without that,
counsel, it just has to be arguable, doesn't it?
Well, yes, arguable probable cause. Yes, sir. That's true. But under Briggs versus State, you can't have a lawful order to leave where there's no request by management to the officers to order a person to leave. And so he never had that order, so it's not arguable because he never had the order that my client was to leave. You know, the next thing is that at the point my client, he walked up on my client was sitting down. The jawing that had been going back and forth was not still ongoing, so he wasn't acting up at that point. Now, and furthermore, you know, our contention is that he shouldn't have been ordered to leave without his 12-year-old child. Now, moving on to the issue of, well, I'll tell you what, I've been talking and I see that I'm well into my rebuttal, so I'm going to stop talking now. Thank you, Jeff.
Thank you, Mr. Gillen. Ms. Lefevre?
Good morning, Your Honors, and may it please the court. My name is Amanda Lefevre, and I represent the appellees in this matter. Specifically, I represent Officer James Gibson, who was sued in both his individual and official capacity as a police officer with the City of Valonia, Arkansas. I'm here today to respectfully request that this court affirm the district court's grant of qualified immunity to Officer Gibson and summary judgment to the City of Valonia. Because arguable probable cause did exist in this case, as correctly determined by the district court, to arrest Mr. Rayburn for, at a minimum, obstructing governmental operations. I'd like to briefly address Judge Gross's question from earlier with respect to the directive to the officer from the school. Yes, there was no officer from the school or agent of the school said to Officer Gibson, you need to remove Mr. Rayburn right now. However, the officer was called to the ballpark because of the parents getting into it at this ball game. And the directive given to the officer was Mr. Rayburn is the issue. And not only has he been an issue, is an issue, we are concerned he's going to continue to be an issue. Please talk to him, and if he can calm down, he can stay. Sort of the inverse of that is if he can't calm down, then he has to go. Officer Gibson's attempts to even have that conversation with Mr. Rayburn were entirely frustrated by Mr. Rayburn. When Officer Gibson approaches Mr. Rayburn, Mr. Rayburn's concern is not for his 12-year-old child who is running around the ballpark unattended. His concern is to continue watching his middle child's high school baseball game. With respect to, I believe there was some statement made that that defendant appellees did not make the argument to the district court that if arguable probable cause existed for the obstruction charge, then that is sufficient to grant the officer qualified immunity. We absolutely argue that to the district court. In doing so, we cited to, I believe, the Smithson case. The district court, in coming to the conclusion that arguable probable cause existed for the obstruction charge, replied on Devin Peck v. Alford. However, we did make the argument. We just cited to a different case at the summary judgment level. With respect to Mr. Rayburn's intent, and I think Mr. Gillum was discussing the jury instruction, this is a defense to the criminal charge, not a manner in which to defeat the existence of arguable probable cause for the charge with respect to what the conduct engaged in by the officer. Appellees do agree with appellant that the case does rise and fall and with the existence of arguable probable cause. However, given that Mr. Rayburn's conduct during the encounter with Officer Rayburn entirely frustrated Officer Gibson's attempts to have this discussion with Mr. Rayburn, the district court was
counsel,
correct.
Let me ask you about that. Are you familiar with the Eighth Circuit's decision in Stufflebeam?
Yes, Your Honor.
I think that doesn't that case present a problem for your theory here, because as our other precedent, like Nelson and Kelly, there was interference with the government operations involving an investigation of others. Here we have an investigation of Mr. Rayburn, and that would immediately bring up some constitutional problems, like the right to remain silent or the right to leave if you're not under arrest.
Yes, Your Honor, respectfully, I don't think Stufflebeam presents an issue. My understanding of that case is that the plaintiff there was the passenger in a car that had been pulled over. The officer who pulled over the driver in Stufflebeam was investigating the officer's conduct investigating the driver's conduct, and in doing so asked the passenger of the car to identify himself and provide his ID. And at that point, there was no indication that that individual had engaged in any sort of criminal conduct or was suspected of having done so. Here, the officer was attempting to have the discussion that he was directed to have by the school with Mr. Rayburn. I think the school is, well within its rights to ask a law enforcement officer to ask a disruptive parent to calm down, and if he can't stop disrupting the game, then he's got to leave.
Counsel, that's all true, but explain to me how Mr. Rayburn impeded Officer Gibson's government function.
So when Officer Gibson approached Mr. Rayburn, Mr. Rayburn was hesitant and refusing to engage with the officer to begin with. I think the first thing out of Mr. Rayburn's mouth...
Is he required to answer questions?
I think at that point he is required to have a conversation with the officer, in so much as the school has asked the officer to discuss with this parent to calm down and stop disrupting the game, and if you don't stop disrupting the game, then you have to leave. The officer's ability to even give those instructions to Mr. Rayburn were obstructed by Mr. Rayburn's conduct. I think the first thing out of his mouth was, "I'm going to go watch this game over here." Basically,
if he was
away.
Not under arrest or in custody, doesn't he have the right to leave?
If he's not under arrest or in custody, then he would have the right to leave, but he is being detained by the officer so that the officer can can engage in the conduct in which he's been requested to engage in, which we contend is lawful. If that if the school or the people who are in charge of the property say, this person's causing a problem on our property, we need you to go talk to him and tell him, knock it off, or you have to go, then that is lawful conduct by the officer, and he is within his rights to have that conversation with Mr. Rayburn.
Counsel, I want to ask you a question. I want to go a little bit farther back. I watched the video, and it's my recollection, you can correct me, that the officer required Mr. Rayburn to leave his seat and to come to the front of the officer's vehicle where the exchange could be recorded. Is that what happened?
Yes, Your Honor.
So my question is, what was the authority of the officer to require Mr. Rayburn to leave his seat and come to the front of the vehicle?
The authority of the
officer... If he was not under arrest?
Your Honor, I'd argue it's almost similar to a Terry stop or reasonable suspicion issue. The officer has been informed that this person is causing a disturbance at the baseball game to such an extent that I think the game was paused at one point in time, and they need him to calm down and continuing in that behavior, and be instructed that if he continued in that behavior, there was a concern that he would also continue engaging in that behavior. The officer's, I think the officer was appropriate in asking Mr. Rayburn to step in front of his car for the sole purpose so that the entirety of the interaction could be recorded on the officer's dash cam. Did I answer your question, Your Honor? I'm not quite sure I did. So I do think that if Officer Gibson has undisputed information that Mr. Rayburn is causing a disruption and being disorderly at a public event, that the officer does have the authority to investigate that briefly in the manner of a detention or similar to a Terry stop and ask him, hey, what's going on? They've identified you as an issue. We need you to stop. And for that reason, it's the appellee's position that Officer Gibson did have the authority to detain Mr. Gibson in order to speak to him about the behavior that he had been engaging in up until that point. And then when Mr. Rayburn was not cooperating with the officer, ostensibly under the appellant's argument out of concern for his 12-year-old child, which I do want to briefly address that. There was never any danger to the 12-year-old. He was running around the ballpark, and he had an adult sibling who was there who ultimately took custody of the child. I can see my time is running low. Your Honors, I appreciate your time and would respectfully request that this court affirm the district court's grant of qualified immunity and summary judgment to the city and Officer Gibson. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Ms. Lefevre. Mr. Gillum?
To get unmuted. Your Honors, under Rule 2.2, an officer can request information from the individual, but they can't tell them that they're obliged to provide it. And under Rule 3.1, there has to be some reasonable suspicion of disorderly conduct or something in order to engage in the Terry stop. And, quite frankly, they've admitted there was no probable cause for that, that there was no appropriate arrest for that. The next issue is that my client would have had the right to remain silent. In terms of, not to tell the officer or respond to his questions, things like that. And then the other issue is that to the extent that Officer Gibson would have been telling my client, I need you to get up and come over to the police car and stand in front of the police car so you can be on video, which is clearly designed to obtain admissions from somebody who has the right to exercise the Fifth. he can only do that if there's reasonable suspicion, probable cause to of a crime. Now, if he's just wanting to deliver a message from park management, what he needs to do there is just at the guy's seat, tell him, hey, park management says you have to calm down or you're going to have to go. He didn't have the right to make him get up and go elsewhere.
Known that the officer was acting on behalf of, as you put it, park management when he asked him to talk about the situation?
No, sir. There's no evidence that the officer ever told him that he was there on behalf of park management. And it's, you know, they're not synonymous, the police department and park management. And I think I'm out of time.
Thank you, Mr. Gillum. Thank you also, Ms. Lefevre. We appreciate both counsel's participation in argument this morning. We will continue to study the briefing in the matter and render a decision in due course. Thank you. Counsel may be excused.
Have a good day.
Thank you, Your Honors.
You as well.
Have a good day.